Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, Chairman and Founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity pushing the agenda for integrative medicine in cancer care for the last 18 years. And I'm also the regular host of this show. One of the great champions of integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology, who I love to feature on the show regularly, is Dr. Naysha Winters. Dr. Naysha is a powerhouse of passion and expertise when it comes to promoting integration, and one of her latest initiatives in this direction is a new book that she's co-authored with a group of experts. By the time this interview airs, the book will be available in the UK, so I'm speaking to Dr. Winters on the US West Coast over the internet to find out all about it. Hi, Naysha.
Well, hello, everybody. Good to see you, Robin, as always.
Well, I'm always excited to have you back on the Yes Live Show. Today, we're going to be talking about a new book just out in the UK that you are one of the co-authors of, Mistletoe and the Emerging Future of Integrative Oncology. So I've got my copy here. It's a beautifully produced book, packed with charts, diagrams, scientific references, the lot. I'm guessing this is the most comprehensive book on mistletoe therapy ever. Well, it's certainly the most up-to-date. You're hugely knowledgeable on the whole arena of integrative oncology, including lots of the sort of relatively new kids on the block, such as cannabinoids. I mean, even intravenous vitamin C is a bit of a newbie compared with mistletoe, which has got a seriously long history. Now, you, I think, could reasonably be described as having a bit of a thing about mistletoe. So why do you give this old treatment so much attention?
First of all, great way to like segue into this, and that this is a very old therapy. It goes back tens of thousands of years in the whole herbal formulation, and it's been used for things like neuralgias and epilepsy and hypertension as its whole plant extract for many years, and has a beautiful place just in conventional and even esoteric herbalism. Mm. But about 100 years ago, crazy philosopher, good old Rudolf Steiner, was making some observations in nature and was seeing that these little clumps of greenery growing within these trees looked awfully similar to a tumor. And in such, as we've learned in a lot of the vitalistic medical backgrounds, the doctrine of signatures makes you wonder, hey, if it looks like X, does it do, you know, Y, Z? And so he was asking those questions, and he partnered up with an oncologist of the time, Dr. Ida Begman, and they started in 1917 practicing on a few patients with an injectable form of mistletoe that has been in continuous use ever since. It did not officially go in as a cancer therapy until 1921. So we just really hit our, just passed our 100-year birthday of this as a cancer therapy. But it has a long, consistent track record as an injectable form, as an adjunct treatment for cancer.
Well, first things, I didn't really know that it got this history before that of doing other things. That's something I've only learned recently. Secondly, I've always pretty gobsmacked by the fact that it just appeared out of nowhere because Steiner thought it looked like a cancer. I mean, that's just like, in the history of cancer research, that's got to be unique, hasn't it?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we actually have come across things sort of accidentally working, you know. So, I mean, that's where we got antibiotics for crying out loud with Fleming, just like observing these molds on an orange, you know. And people as weird as Edgar Cayce may be to some of your listeners, you know, he was having these visions, these downloads about the use of using castor oil as topical applications to treat inflammation and pain. And yet years later, the name, the castor bean, and its Palma de Christi is its Latin name, means palm of Christ, interestingly enough. But it is, we've now been able to show in research, you know, to catch up with someone's visions of 100 years ago to show that, in fact, it does lower inflammation. It does take away swellings and redness and whatnot. So it's weird that we have come across these types of things in medicine. And part of that, science is about asking questions. And a good observer will always be asking questions. We don't know truly anything, right? We just know enough to keep asking more questions. And I think mistletoe is no different in that someone observed, asked a few questions, started applying it, bada bing, bada boom, 100 years later, it's a big cancer therapy. And so it's the nature of the beast.
Fantastic. All right. Well, you know, I wish all science was just the way you described it. I describe science generally as being, they used to think they know, but now we do.
And then the second you qualify it and think that you know, you really know nothing.
No.
To me, it elucidates more curiosity and deep sense of being humble. Because every time I think I figure something out, it's like the rug gets pulled out from underneath me.
Yeah.
And I think that a good doctor is someone who recognizes that and continues to roll with it as it flows and follow the flow along versus fighting it.
Right. All right. Totally agree. So you're co-author of this book. Who are the others involved and what role do they play in creating it?
Well, first of all, I feel like the tiniest little guppy in this giant ocean of talent with regards to mistletoe, integrative oncology, anthroposophical medicine. So please know that I'm probably the least experienced and least intelligent of my co-authors, of which there are seven of us in total. And so we've got, you know, I'll hold up the book again because you've had it in your own hands here. But Dr. Stephen Johnson, we'll start with him. Stephen has been well known in the anthroposophical community. In fact, he was the head of the Anthroposophical Association in the United States for many, many moons. Brilliant anthroposophical physician and has worked a lot for many, many years in the world of oncology and just really passionate about it. He's on the board of Uriel Pharmacy. He knows everybody in the mistletoe community in Europe. He comes to Europe every year to meet with all the producers of mistletoe. He's just old hat at this and he's incredibly humble. You would never see this man show any form of arrogance. In fact, nobody on this book has an arrogant bone in their body. They're all just very passionate and compassionate human beings. Mm. And then we have Dr. Adam Blanning, who he himself says he's not a cancer expert, but he for sure is a terrain expert. The gentleness in which he expresses and shares his knowledge and supports patients. He has seen so many of my patients over the years who were dealing with cancer. And though he says he never treats cancer, I've seen beautiful healings happen in patients under his care because he takes them back to the rhythm of themselves, the understanding and awareness of themselves. And he does a beautiful chapter in this book on the warming components and fever therapies in general.
I was going to get to that.
Yeah. And we'll come back to it because he does, I think it's one of my favorite chapters in the book because it's so compelling to help you understand why this medicine is so powerful and why it has to be placed appropriately among other therapies for it to get the biggest bang for its buck.
Yeah.
And then you have folks like Dr. Mary DeBuse, who is in the direct lineage of Ida Begman. She works and practices in the very hospital that Ida Begman started in integrative oncology. She herself is an oncologist. She's a hematological oncologist and among some of the best researchers and clinicians in the field of oncology, but also anthroposophical medicine and mistletoe in particular. Her hospital does a load of research in mistletoe. And then Dr. Paul Faust, a naturopathic colleague, brother from another mother, brilliant scientist, brilliant immunologist. I mean, I learned more in him teaching immunology than I ever learned in medical school in my training since. Mm-hmm. He does a beautiful job in how he trains the physicians, but also the chapter in this book. Dr. Mark Hancock, one of the dearest doctors I've ever known. I have a ton of patients that go and see him. He trains, he's very, very gracious with his time and training other physicians and being present for other patients. He's one of the few doctors who does intratumoral in the United States.
Injecting directly into tumors. Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go, right into the tumor. And he spent a lot of time training with physicians in Europe. And one of his mentors that passed away just before we finished this book, Dr. Maurice Orange, well known in Europe, probably known as modern day father of mistletoe, and Mark directly, you know, trained directly under him. So talk about a level of brilliance and expertise. And then Dr. Peter Hinderberger, our Swiss doctor who transplanted to the United States and was the head of the Anthroposophical Medical Society in the United States for many decades. Brilliant, compassionate, gentle soul who has such a level of wisdom and awareness and relationship with this plant that I just think he does it such service. So it's an honor to be among these writers. And when people read this book, you have to remember these are seven voices, seven different life experiences. And the way it all came together, I get chills saying it. We feel like the book wrote itself, although we had help with a beautiful sort of ghostwriter who helped make sure our weaving of the story made sense.
Yeah.
But we feel like this book wrote itself and that Mistletoe needed to be heard and it needed to be modernized and it needed to be comprehensive above and beyond what was already on the market in Mistletoe writings and lectures. So we're very, very proud of it. We feel like stewards of this plant, and we really hope that it maintains and continues to build its rightful place in the integrative oncology world.
Right. Fantastic. Okay, so I'll pick up on a couple of things. One is you used one of your favorite words, but not everybody will know what it means, but they will do by the end of this show, which, as you said, terrain, just quickly rattle it off. What's that about when you're talking about the doctor who is heating people up and things?
Yes. Well, basically, you know, when we think about cancer, we think about the cancer cell or the cancer tumor. And our entire focus for the past 75 plus years in oncology has been on that cancer tumor or that cancer tumor cell. And yet what we've learned more and more, I mean, I was reading about this from Beauchamp's time, okay? Dr. Beauchamp was part of the, where Louis Pasteur kind of got all the accolades and we all now follow germ theory. His colleague at the time was talking about terrain theory, and that sort of got suppressed.
Yeah.
Down the road in the 80s, Dr. Mina Bissell, who's a mentor of mine, she started talking about the extracellular matrix. People like Dr. Thomas Seyfried dusted off the metabolic theory of cancer from Otto Warburg's time from the 1920s and kind of modernized it and started asking more questions about it, which continue the dialogue in what is cancer today. And what has happened is we're realizing it's not really, cancer's not really happening at the cancer cell level or the cancer tumor level. It's happening in what is that cancer cell living in? What is the pond that it is swimming in? And that's where we talk about terrain. So what food, what thoughts, what nutrient deficiencies or excesses, what toxins, what chemical exposures, what hormonal changes we're being exposed to, what our microbiome is doing, all of those are signaling information in the system that says, grow, baby, grow, with regards to out of control growth of cancer cells, or stay stable and maintainable, you know, and a normal turnover of cell growth and cell renewal and cell death. When we're functioning well, we get rid of the bad and we bring in the new. When we've gone amok, when we've gone into derangement, when our terrain has gotten sort of filthy, it will go into aberrant growth cycles, which is what leads to things like cancer and other inflammatory processes. So when we talk about terrain, we're talking about all the other things that help keep those cancer cells dormant or non-existent, because we all have it. We all have cancer cells, all of us, all of the time. We all have cancer all of the time, but it's up to how our terrain, the health of that swimming pool or that pond is doing, that keeps those cells in check. And so that's what folks in anthroposophical medicine, integrative medicine, naturopathic medicine, at least we should be, that's where our interest lies. And that, of course, we want to help push back the tumor and the tumor cell, but we need to do so by also enhancing, supporting, cleaning up the terrain that surrounds those cells.
Which, as Mistletoe has a lot to do with that, of course.
My goodness. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for that. And the other thing, just for the benefit of the listeners who are saying, anthropo what? you better just say what anthroposophical medicine is in the shortest way you can.
Sure. And again, I am like the small guppy, as I said, in these authors. Most of the authors here are trained, have certification in anthroposophical medicine. We do a nice definition of it at the beginning of the book. But in essence, back to good old Rudy, who happened to notice the growth of tumors in the tree, he also is the father of this concept of anthroposophical philosophy of medicine, also of architecture, of farming. So people who are familiar with permaculture, that is an anthroposophical concept that comes from the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner. And the same thing with things like education. Waldorf education is a direct descent of Rudolf Steiner's philosophy. And so anthroposophical medicine is sort of like, or anthroposophy is sort of a collection of all of these different systems, some of which are agriculture, political, art, architecture, health, education, agriculture, all the things around. So it's a collection of all of these different offshoots of one philosophy that has morphed in and melded into our culture and our society sort of insidiously. Like, we don't even recognize a lot of our children go to Waldorf schools, or we practice permaculture, or we get mistletoe, and we don't even recognize that it comes from one person's ideas.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, very much so. One of the ways that people may have bumped into anthroposophical output in some ways, they might have been buying their Weleda products without realizing it's anything to do with that. But of course, they are the best. They're fantastic. Yes. I love them.
And so clean. Weleda, yeah. And Walla, W-A-L-A, are offshoots of all of that. Very, very clean, very thoughtful, very purposeful, very intentional ways of raising the herbs that go into these products, and the way they're even harvested and the way they're mixed based on sort of seasons and lighting and sunrise, sunset, moon cycles. I mean, it sounds kind of woo-woo and esoteric, but it probably explains why these products are so darn good.
They are. Yeah. I'm definitely a fan. Okay, so back to the authors again. How would you describe your role in the book?
Oh my gosh. Probably my biggest role is that I'm the go-getter. And I think they would all say this book probably wouldn't have happened without my extreme tenaciousness, because
I can believe that. You've definitely got that.
You've known me a while to know that's not, it's true. You know, it's like, I love this. And when we all got together to start teaching these courses to physicians, the first time we did this was in June 2019. And in fact, I'd already been working on a mistletoe book prior to that with colleagues, but for a variety of reasons, that book did not come to fruition. And so I was also trying to carry that boulder by myself. And when we did this group of bringing these physicians together who had never met each other, had a very, maybe a couple superficial environments, never taught together, we got together in June 2019 in Baltimore, Maryland, in the United States. There was some amazing synergy and magic that happened that week, that weekend together. And it was the end of that weekend, on our last day, kind of our decompression of the weekend, that I said, would you guys be interested in taking this course and basically turning it into a book? And they all said yes. Little did they know that October 2020, it basically became very clear that, okay, we've been talking about it, now it's time to do it. And we were in the throes of COVID, so everyone had a little bit of different time on their hands compared to pre-COVID times. And we really all took the content we'd done from previous courses and fleshed it out a little bit further and focused on what we already were training our colleagues in during the coursework. So it's sort of like an extension of the conferences, the medical trainings themselves. But we knew we needed it to read more like a story, and we knew it needed to also be more assimilable by the general public as well as the physicians. So we really wanted to create that bridge. And so probably one of my strengths in this group is I'm a humongous bridge maker. I don't know if it's because I'm a Libra, whatever it is, but I've been super passionate about integrated medicine and bringing in very standard of care conventional oncologists and very woo-woo esoteric healers and bringing them all at the same table and realizing everybody has something powerful to offer, to contribute, and to learn from. And so I think I bring that skill set to this. I think that I bring the push and the drive to say, let's birth this thing together. And that I really do value the insights from my colleagues and do really value working well with others. I prefer working as a collective. That's my happy place. I don't like to do things by myself. And so it was really fun to bring that together. And my two major chapters are on my concepts of test, assess, address, don't guess, which you and I talked about before, where I help people use their internal personalized data to drive the process of their own healing journey. And then I speak to very much that bridge at the end of the book, but I also have an entire chapter about well-vetted integrative therapies that play well with mistletoe. So I do a chapter on things like cannabis, low-dose naltrexone, vitamin C, hyperthermia, hyperbaric oxygen, ketogenic diet, fasting. You know, those are the things that a chapter goes into. Some of the most well-characterized, studied, and reputable integrative therapies that play very, very well with mistletoe.
Well, that's very interesting, and I can see that really is a part for you to play, because the thing about mistletoe is it's tended to be off in this little box of anthroposophical medicine over there doing its thing, and it's been good and all the rest of it, but it's not really connected to hyperbaric oxygen. You know what I mean? It's like, well, where's the link there? So you were talking about modernizing mistletoe. I think, in a way, that's what you've done there by relating it to all the other things that people are interested in, that people are doing, and how does it fit with that? And up to now, people have been having to kind of make it up for themselves. So that's an incredibly useful thing to do, I'm sure, both for mistletoe and for the people who are interested. So you said about the book being, you know, this is basically built out of training for physicians, but also you aim to make it accessible. You know, what's an awful lot of the people who are listening to this, people who have got cancer themselves, is this a book they'd buy if they were interested in mistletoe for themselves?
Well, it's interesting because I've had a lot of patients that I've worked with directly or indirectly via consulting with their physicians on their behalf, or people have heard me present at medical conferences or at conferences for the lay person. And then people who've read Metabolic Approach to Cancer, which is my first book with my co-author, Jess Higgins-Kelly. And so what I'm getting in the feedback of what we had a few beta readers, we had about 20 beta readers who read it first and gave us feedback of, yeah, this is kind of a heady chapter, or no, this one's easy to digest. We actually have at the beginning of the book a guide that basically says, if you are a doctor, then maybe this chapter and this chapter will mean very little to you, so step ahead to these chapters. If you are a layperson, these two chapters may be challenging for you, but grok through and know that there's a lot more that's very digestible. What I'm getting in the feedback is it's pushing people where they need to be pushed, and it's reminding people of where they thought they were already experts. It's helping them kind of feel humble of like, yeah, I remember that. I haven't used it in a while, but here we are. And so it really is a conversation starter. It gets people thinking. It gets people curious again on this level. And when I get the feedback from folks who picked it up, they're like, this is so much more than a book on mistletoe. And that's where I just want to do like a high five, because that was our goal. It's almost like mistletoe is the gateway drug.
Right.
Because what mistletoe offers is it's an idea. It's a philosophy as much as it is an actual therapy. And even the way we think about using it, how we determine what is the right form and who it is best fit for, and their type of cancer and the type of things happening in their body at the time they're wanting to use this medicine, it gets people to think about the whole person and not just the tumor or the tumor cell, which then opens them wide to look at cancer in a different way, to look at integrative oncology in a different way and to look at their true N of one experience with this in a very different way. And then it also starts to lay the groundwork for where does the future of oncology need to go? Where must it go? And I feel like it's a really big call to action that the current model is not enough as it is. It needs to evolve. It needs to expand. It's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's how do we build upon it and make this more accessible for everybody on this planet to have access to truly good, vetted, integrative care that brings the best of standard of care medicine in with the best vetted integrative therapies in under one roof, under one conversation, so that you don't have to go around piecemealing this together and find your doctor over here who can give you mistletoe and the doctor over here can give you IV vitamin C and the doctor over here is going to give you your chemo and the doctor over here is going to talk to you about your nutrition or whatever. It's like, that's how we do it right now.
And we are working
so hard to change it, educating the doctors, creating campuses where all this can happen in one place, and changing even the model in which we pay for healthcare, because most of these therapies in this book are out of pocket, not covered by your national healthcare system or insurance elsewhere. And so how do we start to change a model that does truly become accessible to everybody and not just for those with means?
Well, so you got it in the title there about the bigger intention of the book, the future, the emerging future of integrative oncology. So yeah, it's all there. Great stuff. Okay, and just to pick up one little detail, another of your phrases you throw in regularly, of the N equals one, just for the non-scientific, the importance about that is about genuine personalization, isn't it? Do you want to just say a tiny bit about that?
Sure. You know, a lot of folks will go to someone who's been trained in integrative medicine, and they'll think, oh my gosh, because it would be such an eye-opener, such a difference compared to, say, the NHS or the insurance model in the United States or elsewhere in the world, and it will feel like an N of one. But if you've been in the field as long as I've been in the field of integrative medicine, you start to recognize that we protocolize integrative medicine just as much as we do standard of care medicine, okay? This is really hard to hear, and it really upsets some of my colleagues, but it's the reality. Yeah. It's the reality. And we do it because it's scalable. It's doable. You know, as a physician, it's much easier to be like, I did these protocols really well, so it's easy for me to repeat. Yeah. And you can appreciate that. But outcomes and the very patient in front of us is who matters and who matters the most. And it's going to take a lot more effort by the physician to explore with that patient what they need in that moment. And so that concept of test. So before you throw a supplement or a treatment protocol, standard of care or otherwise at the patient, you need to know what they need. So for me, it seems really ridiculous. If you have a patient who has a new diagnosis and a new biopsy that's sitting there in a frozen paraffin block, you know, that no one's looked at deeper to say, what's the personality of that tissue? Well, okay, it's the pathology says it's an adenocarcinoma of the breast. Okay, great. But you know what? We can send them off to even know more. We can know if it's hormonal status, we can know its proliferation score status. We can know how aggressive or non-aggressive this cancer is. And then that helps us determine how aggressive we need to be. Mm-hmm. So that's one step. Then you can take that same tissue and send it off to look at deeper look at its targets. So you can look at molecular markers. You can look at DNA, you know, methylation issues. You can look at DNA repair mechanisms, other signaling mechanisms, and you can know how it's going to respond to certain targeted therapies, but even certain naturopathic or integrative therapies or off-label drugs that target that pattern gorgeously. But then you also want to know what was going on with that patient. What was their biography that led to their biology? You know, we find so much that within a couple of years of their diagnosis, they had some big life event that really kind of pushed. It was like the straw that finally broke the camel's back. We want to look at the individual drivers, because you can put 10 people with adenocarcinoma of the breast, all stage 2, in the same room, and they all have a different reason for their breast cancer. So we can explore deeply enough to understand, okay, this person's more metabolic, this person's more hormonal disrupted, this person had some microbiome issues, this person had some major stressors or circadian rhythm imbalances, etc. We can know that from the get-go. When we take in all of that data, then the testing component, we then can elucidate the patterns. And then we can educate the patient on those patterns. We can say, you know, that extremely stressful couple of years that led to your divorce, and you carrying the burden of that and the burden of a sick child at the same time that impacted your health and vitality, putting you at the back of the bus versus the front, your total lack of eating well for yourself and nourishing your body appropriately and just living on carbs and fast food just to get by, and your inability to get yourself out in the sunshine and regular exercise led to these derangements of your terrain that made you vulnerable to DNA damage that then led to cancering processes. That's when we educate the patient, then they know the why they got there.
Right.
Then you're also then more committed to the how are we going to change this? Because if you just come on and start throwing treatments at people and they don't understand why they got there and what your treatments are addressing, they're not attached to their outcome. The skin is not in the game. So they become passive participants and their outcomes are poorer than those who are active participants who understand why they are where they are and what it's going to take to get out of it. And so when you have that dynamic, that shifts something in our physiology as well. So that moves into the address, which helps us determine exactly what therapies are best suited at what time, in what order, and at what intensity and duration they need to be layered in. So we actually save people a ton of time and wasted energy and money and resources to know exactly where to treat them from the get-go. Versus people like me who see people who already spent $100,000, US dollars on treatment that was never appropriate for them. Right? So this is where we're hoping the future of integrative oncology is going. Not hoping, it is going. It is going here. We're not hopeful, it's happening. Okay?
Yay.
Is that we can know in real time in an automated environment, a data collection environment, an automated environment, a training of physicians in this methodology, as well as patient advocates in this methodology to help people understand their own test, assess, address, so that they themselves get exactly what they individually need to change the course of their lives, to change the course of their health and well-being.
So a very different approach, but this kind of big investment at the beginning leads to a much less waste later on and a much better outcome. That's the underpinning of the whole thing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com. Or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now. But did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
But it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, the N thing, which is all about the number of people who are in the trial, normally you're looking to see how big it is. But for this, you're actually, one is the best number, and because it's so individual. Very interesting. Yeah. It's a kind of, in some ways, it's completely the opposite of what's been going on for the last 100 years.
Exactly. Because we are always looking at the bell-shaped curve. We recognize that there's a chunk of people who will respond to this protocol.
Yeah.
There's a chunk of people who won't respond at all. And there's a chunk of people who will respond atrociously. We usually scrape those edges off when we're showing our data, when we are publishing our results. We like to keep the outliers out. They make our results look messy. So we only show the favorable results. Right? It's very rare that you get to see the whole picture, or it kind of gets swept under the rug and maybe hidden deeper into the small print. Most people just like to read their headlines. So when you look at that, for instance, everyone spends so much time and money now talking about immune therapies, standard of care immune therapies like Keytruda, Opdivo, checkpoint inhibitors, CTLA-4, 5 inhibitors. These drugs we're spending billions a year in research on these drugs, and they're making billions a year in revenue, and yet less than 20% of patients will have a response to these medications. And when I say response, that does not mean cure.
No.
A response simply means that it either something stabilized happened. The disease. Yeah. Either stabilized it or pushed the tumor burden back just enough on an image to show that, hey, it's not getting bigger. So therefore, that's a success. Mm-hmm. And yet of the, 96 drugs that we've evaluated over the last 17 years in oncology, a lot of those are the immune therapies, we've managed to increase overall survival rate by about 2.4 months.
Yeah.
That's horrific. When I look at the way we do things with this concept, with this book, and what we are changing out there, I'm redefining success in oncology. 2.4 months is not okay.
Yeah.
It is not okay. And when you can look at bringing on a therapy like mistletoe or a dietary intervention or another oxidative therapy like hyperbaric or IV vitamin C and pair it with standard of care that's been appropriately selected for that patient because of all of those tests I talked about early on, you're going to have a patient that has far better outcomes, better quality of life, better quantity of life, and it's actually cleaning up and healing their terrain while they're cytoreducing that burden of tumor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, completely with you there. This the shady world of surrogate endpoints, i.e. targets for a therapy which are not really of any interest at all to patients who just want a longer and better life, but sell drugs. Yeah, not good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you. I'm right with you on that one. I'm glad I asked that question. It went a long way. but it was
always.
it was good. Really good. Really good. So here we are. We're only a third of the program to go. We haven't mentioned a single thing about what mistletoe therapy is even like. And maybe that's not the most important thing, because you can find that information out quite easily. We're talking about a lot of stuff that I think is really important. And it applies to mistletoe therapy, but also a lot of the approaches, obviously, that you're engaged in.
Yeah.
I am quite interested to actually explore some of the sort of nether regions of the book, in a way, because you do have these sort of fascinating looking chapters called The Physiology of Warmth. I mean, that is not the sort of stuff you come across in your medical textbook so much, is it? And the constitutional care in the anthroposophic world. You know, so this is all a bit, touchy-feely, but I think you would say this is actually very important in the breadth of the way that this is being looked at, the way of healing the person fully is being looked at. Do you want to say a bit about this broader background?
Sure. Well, just a little context for everyone before I dive into that specific chapter and reason for that chapter. So when you look at the contents here, we talk about the how to use the book, because we wanted to be able to speak to both physician and patient so that folks didn't get stuck. Like if they got to chapter two and it's all about immunology and they give up, then they miss juiciness that's coming, right?
Yeah.
Or doctors maybe read chapter one and it's too light and fluffy and they don't think there's going to be any depths to the book. We want to get people to know that this book will engage each of you. I promise that. I've yet to have someone come back and be like, dud, it's not happened yet. You know, we're like,
good.
We're pretty proud of this.
Good result.
So then the forward of our book is written by the head of solid tumor oncology from Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Okay.
He was also the first primary investigator for the mistletoe trial at Johns Hopkins. And so Dr. Luis Diaz, he's now at the very hospital that gives out the Coley's Award every year for innovations in medicine. And yet when I'm walking the halls of Sloan Kettering and exploring those areas, no one even knows who this man was. And
Coley,
Dr. William S. Coley was the first sort of modern day immunology oncologist who was using, basically given someone an infection to create a raging fever, which then pushed back the tumor burden and put people into remission. And that therapy was utilized from the early 1900s all the way through 1962. Okay. All the way through until other chemotherapeutic agents really hit the airwaves, if you will, and really suppressed this very powerful immune therapy. you can still get access to. So I love that Dr. Luis Diaz writes the intro, gives a little bit of history of how he got involved with this book, but is also a very well-respected conventional oncologist who also happens to be at an institution where sort of the mother of immunology, or the mother of mistletoe, how we understand it today, was birthed. So I just think that's pretty interesting. And then we go into a beautiful introduction by Dr. Stephen Johnson, who really talks about anthroposophical medicine. And then the whole first section is just the landscape of mistletoe therapy. And that's about the history of the mistletoe plant and how it's made its foray into modern oncology. Then there's this amazing, juicy, intense chapter on immunology by Dr. Faust. And then the state of current medical research. So those first chapters 2 and 3 are pretty scientific, but they also give you the teeth of this to make you realize this is not woo-woo esoteric.
Right. Right.
That's why we wanted to open it with that, because it is birthed from a relatively woo-woo and esoteric philosophy and concept, and yet research and science has caught up to it,
right,
which I think is really fascinating. And so that next section, mistletoe in clinical practice, is where we start to talk about the different host trees, the different plants that mistletoe grows on, or tree host that mistletoe grows on, which also changes the lectin content, the cancer fighting effect of these different plants from what they're growing on. And then we go into the testing. So you can understand the person before you decide what therapy to give them. And then that moves into the human-centered aspect. That N of one section is part three, which goes into the physiology of warmth, which I'll touch on here in a moment, the constitutional care, and understanding how to understand the pattern and the humanity of the person before you that you're treating from this anthroposophical philosophy. It's beautiful. And when you read it, patients who've never even seen an anthroposophical doctor, when they read it, it resonates because they see themselves in the chapter. And doctors that read it, it makes sense to them, because if you're a systems thinking doctor, you now have another tool to assess your patients, to understand where they're coming from, to better serve them as their clinician. So it's a win-win for both patient and provider to know the patient even more in depth. And then we move into how this pairs with other anthroposophical remedies, and even, as I mentioned, remedies outside of anthroposophical medicine, like vitamin C and nutrition. Mm. And then the whole fourth part is about weaving it together. So special considerations and applications in clinical practice, the future of integrative medicine in oncology in particular, that's where we kind of wrap it up. And then the afterword of this book was actually written by a previous classmate of mine, who was also, before she became a naturopathic doctor, she was an RN. And like ICU, like very high intensity emergency medicine nursing, went to naturopathic school, became very famous in her own right in women's health, had a TV show, a radio show. She's been known as a major bridge builder in integrative medicine, was the president of the California Association of Naturopathic Medicine. And she herself, after being the advocate for so many others for so long, she met cancer personally herself in these last few years. And mistletoe has been an integral piece, as well as the rest of the integrative medicine in her story. And she shares that with us so beautifully at the very end. And then the book is chock full of appendices and charts and handouts and references and resources for the physician as well as the patient beyond. So I want you to get that context that we really do take you on a journey with this book.
Definitely.
And so back to that sort of center point, we think of the chapter on the warmth as sort of the pivotal point of this book.
Mm.
Like, we lead you up to it, we introduce it, and then everything kind of builds beyond that.
Mm.
Getting us back to that conversation with Dr. Coley, we have known for thousands of years that fever is very implicated in how our body heals and how it overcomes a variety of illnesses, a variety of diseases. And yet in the last 60 or 70 years, fever has been our nemesis, and we have suppressed it beyond all imagination. And so in medicine, if you have a little baby with a fever, we are immediately telling, pediatricians are immediately telling families, give them a Tylenol, give them an ibuprofen. You've got to break that fever, Our childhood fevers, our childhood exanthems, which are rashes and illnesses of early childhood, are designed physiologically to create fever in our body. And that fever is our immune system education, especially in the first 2 years of our lives, when our entire immune system is being constructed in our GI tract and throughout our body. And so when we suppress that fever, we suppress an opportunity to create a response or a recognition, a response and a remembering to our environment. That's how our immune system works. It first recognizes something's there, then it responds to it, and then it remembers it if it should run into it again. But we are starting everybody off in this world today, a day late, a dollar short. We are suppressing that potential of those three R's from the moment they pop out into this world. We start to, every time they have a little fever, oh, put that down, you put that away, suppress it, knock it down. Fevers are bad, they're uncomfortable, they're dangerous. If you can have a seizure, first of all, a seizure in a kid, it's a thermometer shaking down the thermometer. That's all it is. There's your kid gets rushed off to the ER, they just kind of check him out, rudimentary checkout, give him some fluids and send him home. There are no sequela to this. A fever seizure is literally shaking down at a thermometer. And yet we are so terrified, petrified of that experience that we suppress it to all degrees. What I love about Adam's chapter, Dr. Blanding's chapter, is he also talks about not just what we've done forcefully in medicine to suppress fever, also our lifestyles, our dietary choices are changing into the industrial food revolution and post-industrial revolution in general. We became more indoor. We started getting off our circadian rhythm. We started having the incandescent light bulb and all of these things that our temperatures have naturally dropped. Mm. He goes into some very interesting studies about that. Mm. That makes us much more vulnerable and less resilient to pathogens that come our way. Can we talk about the elephant in the living room of the pandemic that we're all facing?
Yeah.
The problem is not the illness, is not the virus. The problem is the container in which that virus is landing. So I will say that again in a different way. It is never about the virus or the cancer cell, never about those things. It's about the soil in which they land. So I tell people that we can never heal from the soil in which we got sick. So a fever is a really profound way, just like a really scraggly forest that's overgrown and really packed in and no sunshine, no good, there's no good mineral component in the soil and the sunlight can't get down to all those smaller leaves at the base of the forest. You know, that's why we had natural forest fires for years to come and clean all that up and basically re-inoculate the soil. Mm. That is what fevers do to us. They upgrade our immune systems. They educate our immune systems. And we continue to suppress them. And so what we know, for instance, in Chinese medicine is tumors are considered cold stagnation. Mm. And in Chinese medicine, the longer something exists as cold, it will transform as heat. So that cold stagnation later leads to inflammation. So it's that yin, you know, turning into yang and yang turning into yin. But ultimately in Chinese medicine, the way for thousands of years they've understood tumor pathology as a cold stagnation. Mm. The way Dr. Coley saw this, the way even Hippocrates said, give me a fever and I can cure any disease. Mm. The way Coley's took this on, the way Dr. Mayo, as in the Mayo Clinic, he also was big in fever therapies. He also was applying infections to create fever in patients. And so this was going on and we've spent years suppressing that. And yet our colleagues in Europe and Southeast Asia have been using things like hyperthermia for years. They're so far ahead and yet the type of hyperthermia available in the United States is minimal at best. At least it's something. Mm-hmm. But what we can get elsewhere, we have patients that have to fly out of our borders to go and get properly administered high heat, local, regional, and whole body hyperthermia to induce that type of fever. So the best we have to get someone into a fever state in the United States is to give them mistletoe. Mistletoe is the way to warm the core temperature a little bit. It creates a little low-grade warming fever effect, and it changes the terrain. It changes the perfusion. It changes the physiology in that extracellular matrix to make the cancer cells more vulnerable to whatever else you're bringing on board. So think of the mistletoe as like the Trojan horse. Does it have by itself some direct cytotoxic activity, meaning some direct tumor cell kill? Yeah, it definitely can do that, but it's more known for how it supports other therapies.
Yeah.
to get the job done, be it chemo, radiation, hyperthermia, vitamin C, hyperbaric oxygen, dietary interventions, herbal interventions. It is what sort of puts that little wildfire in there so you can come into the vulnerable environment and sort of surprise the cancer cells and get ahead of that. It's a pretty powerful tool.
Mm. Well, that was a great lead-in, a little question there to getting you to go into kind of the mechanism behind mistletoe and what it's actually bringing to the table, which was great. And now we're out of time.
Well, you're just going to have to get the book. That's all. I tell people that, I think people, they go, she's just trying to sell a book. But please know, this book is nonprofit. So all the proceeds go back into funding clinical trials and mistletoe education. So it is imperative for you to know that this is a book that was a labor of love for all of the doctors who took enormous amount of time and effort to put these words before you. And what we hope is it becomes the best practices manual and a steward of this medicine and a call to action for all of us to engage to help change the future of medicine, but integrative oncology in particular. So, it's chock full of really beautiful little juicy details. And we have entire sections that go into the mechanism of action and even a little section of the how-to. If you are doing it, make sure you're doing it right. Make sure if you have a doctor who wants to do it, that they're being properly trained, and make sure that you are keeping the integrity of this medicine intact.
Mm. Yeah. Excellent. Well, this is it's like a rebrand, this seems to me, for mistletoe, a relaunch, let's say. And I wish you every success with it, because obviously, it is a fantastically useful treatment, which is largely ignored in America and Britain. It's not the same story everywhere, but here, you can get it if you're lucky, but it deserves to have that kind of attention. So I wish you every success with your book, and it's been fantastic to talk to you as ever, Nasia.
Such a joy. And please, anybody who has follow-up questions, you can always reach out to me at drnasia.com.
Thank you. Bye. As Dr. Nasia said, cancer care is changing, integration is happening, and without a doubt, she is one of the reasons that's the case. The book, Mistletoe and the Emerging Future of Integrative Oncology, has its own dedicated website at themistletoebook.com, where you can read more about it and order a copy. Many thanks for joining me today. As ever, I'll be back again next week with another edition of the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Bye. Thank you.